Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined yet again for another exciting foray into the world of reaching the nations by my good friend and co-host, Pastor Scott W. Dunford of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. And pray with us that the technology holds up, because here we are again for another episode without our usual producer, but we're thankful for the wonderful David Brandt for filling in for us. And whether you're watching us on the YouTube channel for ABWE or on NRB TV or listening in your favorite podcast platform, go ahead and click whatever button you have available to you, if that's like, if that's share, if that's subscribe, or maybe if that is to register for our premium portal. We would love to have you join our premium family, and for your gift to this ministry, you'll get access to bonus segments, including the bonus episode that we'll record right after this main one with our guest, whom I'm pleased to introduce, Chris Dunford. This is a great start. Combining the names of people. Wow. So
you're like an AI, with an extra arm being put into the picture.
I am. You know? And you know, I am flawed, just to prove that I'm not an AI construct right now. I'm really me. Because to err is human. We are joined, actually rejoined, I think for the third time, if I recall, second or third time, by the one and only Chris Wiley, or C.R. Wiley, as he's known. The author of many helpful books, including Man of the House, The Household and the War for the Cosmos, In the House of Tom Bombadil, one of my personal favorites for those of you Tolkien fans out there. Host of a helpful show with another friend of the show, Glenn Sunshine, the Theology Podcast. If you don't listen to the podcast, go ahead and find that wherever good shows are found. And of course, pastoring in Battleground, Washington, and doing many other helpful things. And Chris and I actually had the privilege of spending some time together a few weeks ago as well, came out for our men's event and spent some time at a conference together. So Chris, do you want to give a better introduction than that? Because that wasn't very good, to be perfectly honest.
No, that was fine, Alex. Good to see you.
And hopefully this time that we're together, hopefully we won't have the liberal Lutheran convention happening below us. Yeah, that was another fun experience. But
that would be interesting.
Whatever you're picturing. Whatever you're picturing, it was that bad, if not worse, truly. So for all of our conservative Luther friends, just not you guys, you know, yes. The bad Lutherans. But anyway, of course, Chris, let's dive into this topic, though. Enough beating around the bush. You've written and thought a lot about this topic of AI lately, and we've had a couple of conversations on this show about AI. I think every podcast has done an obligatory episode or two on AI as it's come up over the past few years. But the way I look at this, we have to have answers as Christians. The bottom line for me is we're given a great commission mandate. We're supposed to disciple the nations. We're supposed to take over the world with Christianity, essentially. And, you know, you can debate what that looks like or how that does or doesn't manifest. My fundamental question is, what if Skynet beats us to the punch? So right. With that as kind of the setup, how have you been thinking about these issues theologically, biblically, historically? And I know you've been writing and speaking to this topic lately.
Yeah, I just finished a book on it and sent it into the publisher just this morning, in fact. So I've been thinking about it for about a year. And the first challenge was to understand, or at least as well as a layman can, speaking as a layman in the world of tech, what's going on with artificial intelligence. And I think I've got a fair grasp of what it entails now. And then thinking about some of the theological and practical kind of challenges that I think we're facing already, and seeing a number of things develop that in some areas are things that the people behind artificial intelligence anticipated and actually were developing the technology to do, and then other things that I think are unintended consequences. So the unintended consequences are the things that are getting all the press right now because of, you know, people being told to kill themselves by artificial intelligence and stuff like that. So, you know, I laugh, but when you understand kind of the nature of the technology, it shouldn't have been a surprise. So large language models are a particular form of artificial intelligence. That's another thing I think needs to be made clear. Large language models don't exhaust the kind of the application or the use of the technology. There are all kinds of things you can do with it. And it's a general purpose technology, which means that when you think you've got it all figured out, you're wrong, because they'll figure out new ways to use it. It's going to be with us for probably the rest of our lives and beyond. And so we just better get used to thinking about it and dealing with it.
The metaphor, if I recall, that you use in the book without giving too much away, although this can build anticipation, but what does Saint Anthony and his time in the desert have to do with AI?
Yeah, well, the book has two parts. First part is entitled The Nightmare, and then the second part is entitled A Dream. And so the first part of the book, I'm looking at the nature of the technology, and I think some of the things that are being pursued, both in a kind of a quiet way, but also in an overt way, with regard to kind of an alternative eschatology that we're going to be dealing with for the rest of our lives, that we're competing with. And then with regard to the second half of the book, looking back to people in Christian history that could be inspirational and maybe even help us to think about how to respond. And I picked out Anthony of the Desert as being a person that we could think about and maybe learn some things from to respond to artificial intelligence.
So for our, Baptist listeners like myself, we're not always up on our saints, Chris.
Well, I didn't know Anthony, Presbyterians were either.
That's right. Well, Saint Anthony is a notable person because he's often considered, kind of the inspiration for monasticism. But he made a huge impression on Athanasius. And Athanasius, of course, is a person that any Christian should be familiar with, because so many of the important doctrines that we hold dear now, really he defended, and at Council of Nicaea and so forth. So a lot of the things that we take for granted in terms of the incarnation and so forth. The fact that the book that Athanasius is best known for is entitled On the Incarnation. But Augustine as well, who read Athanasius' Life of Anthony. So Athanasius actually knew Anthony and considered him a mentor, and wrote a Life of Anthony. And Augustine, St. Augustine, he read it and was tremendously influenced by it and inspired by it. So there are a couple of important theologians in church history that we can look to and say, well, they were impressed with that guy. Maybe there's something to him that it's worth learning about.
Yeah, I think the artwork that I've seen associated with Anthony of the Desert has him battling with these demonic forces all around him. Now, there's been some speculation of the demonic or of the preternatural being involved in AI. And look, I'm one of the least charismatic people theologically. And right. Personality-wise, honestly, in some ways. I'm not the type that sees a demon behind every rock. Scott, right. You can make fun of me later about my past charismatic life. We can, which Scott knows well. I have stories. You guys can write in with your questions. Ask me about sneaky squid spirit LeClaire. Just saying. All right. But anyway, moving along. That was wildly off the topic. There have been, some of our kind of conspiracy theory oriented friends online, have wondered, are there sort of ghosts in the machine? And while that might seem outlandish at first, maybe you're not just drawing an analogy between okay. St. Anthony and our position. Maybe it's actually one of identity. I mean, maybe it is dealing with unseen forces in that sense. Are we crazy? Look, we're Baptists, you're Presbyterian, like none of us are very much a part of this, very right. overtly spiritualistic kind of mode of thinking about the Christian life. But are we crazy to ask questions like that?
Well, yeah, my son, the mathematician, would be like, hey, it's just math, Dad. It's just math. Is it just math?
Yeah, that's one approach. That's one thought. Like, look, it's all bits. It's all ones and zeros.
Well, yeah, when you think about large language models, basically you are talking about a glorified calculator. And so I don't have any problem with the you know, case that it's software. I do think, though, that there are a couple of features to artificial intelligence that make it particularly susceptible to being understood in the way that we're talking about. So meaning the demonic and possibly being used by demonic spirits or evil spirits. So one of the things is that people who are actually behind AI don't actually know how it works. And I think that's the thing that's the big shock. So they've established a framework, a kind of software architecture known as neural networks. And within that framework, artificial intelligence learns. So it's like a black box. We're not really sure what's going on underneath the hood because it basically constructs the software itself as it's learning. So one of the reasons why it's difficult to police it is we don't really know what's happening inside. Now, I'm not making this stuff up. I'm just quoting people.
Yeah.
Send you to resources that would help you understand what I'm talking about. But they're forthright. You know, basically we're looking at, you know, probabilities. And in the architecture, when it comes to stringing words together, there are a range of, you know, technical terms that are used to explain how this sort of architecture works. But when you boil it all down, it's basically a calculator. There's a probability that a particular in a particular context, the next word will be X. And so it just strings that together. But it creates the illusion of sentience. And there are lots of people out there who want it to be conscious. Mm. So we're not talking about, and this is the other feature I think we need to address. There are people who really want to think of it as a medium by which they're communicating with, you know, alien intelligences or, you know, intelligences that are being, you know, sort of conveyed and made accessible through, say, the quantum realm, you know, because of things that are happening at that level with regard to artificial intelligence and quantum computing, which is a whole different subject, but super fascinating and kind of spooky in its own right. Hmm. But so there's a lot of things going on that lend themselves to people thinking in these terms. And it doesn't help that the materialists who are involved in all this stuff, you know, people like Jeffrey Hinton and, you know, Ray Kurzweil and so forth, they actually believe that we're machines, that you and I are machines, and that consciousness is an epiphenomenon. And if it happened with us, why can't it happen with it? In other words, artificial intelligence. Mm. And they do really believe that we're just kind of, you know, there's a kind of philosophy called the computational theory of mind. And, you know, so they actually believe that's how we work. So they don't really think of us as being fundamentally different. Now, when they talk about alien intelligences, when they're talking about, sometimes you'll hear them refer to that. There are a couple things I think they're getting at. One is that knowledge without understanding is one of the things we're dealing with, but we're also dealing with agency without consciousness. And both those things are really just don't compute for us at a kind of everyday level, because we've never encountered that in just our interactions with other people. But when you're dealing with artificial intelligence, you're not talking about a truth-seeking intelligence. You're just basically talking about a very utilitarian, goal-oriented intelligence that's really good at coming up with ways to achieve a goal. And that's one of the reasons why it's so difficult to police. You know, when we think about human beings, you know, we take for granted that we're the imago Dei, that there's a kind of script that we have that helps us to know when we're doing things that are wrong. And we have extra rules in place to keep us in line, because we can't police ourselves. Sin, you know. You know, so there's that problem. But when it comes to artificial intelligence, you can create a bunch of rules like the law of Moses, but even so, there is no internal policeman. There is no conscience. There is no, you know, imago Dei to inform and to provide you with sort of a moral sense. Mm. So it's spooky stuff, and we can read a lot of stuff into it. And I've kind of rambled a little bit, but I could talk about this stuff for days.
Hey, listeners, we know you believe in missions. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be listening to or watching this show. But have you ever wondered what your next step with the Great Commission should be? Maybe the Lord is leading you to serve somewhere yourself. Maybe the Lord is calling you to be a part of sending someone from out of your own church. Well, wherever you are with missions, if you're ready to get serious and find what your next step is, ABWE's 24-hour demo event is for you. Now, it's great to listen to a podcast about missions, but there's nothing that beats the in-person fellowship that can only take place face-to-face, where you're alongside other people that are in your similar station of life, thinking and praying together about your next steps. So if you want to join us at our next event, they happen all throughout the year at our Harrisburg, Pennsylvania-based international headquarters. You can go to demo.abwe.org. Again, that's demo.abwe.org, and use the promo code podcast for a discount on your registration fee. So it takes all excuses away. What are you waiting for? Come find your next step with the Great Commission at demo.abwe.org, promo code podcast. Now back to the show.
Humans have always been dealing with intelligence, you know, with not with intelligence, but with technology. You know, in some ways, like even the creation mandate of our role as sub-creators is to take, you know, uncomplex things and make them complex, make them refined. And yet we see, you know, early in the pages of scripture when, you know, some have compared the plains of Shinar in Babel to the Silicon Valley. You know, is here you have this group of people saying, how can we use this technology around us and build a tower that we could reach, you know, to the heavens? And basically, you know, manipulate and control God. In some ways, it seems like that's kind of what is in some ways happening. What do you see in this whole area of transhumanism, in the areas of way technology is in some ways competing with religion? And even here in the Bay Area, like there's been books talking about how influential a type of spirituality is on these tech companies and how the tech companies are even trying to create their own type of religion within them. Maybe not formally a religion, but they institute a lot of religious type practices into their corporate structures. How do you see this nexus of technology and religion, especially as it relates to AI, kind of becoming a problem for us in our society?
Well, I'm completely on board with your assessment. In fact, there actually are people who are making it explicitly religious. There's just recently, I think, one tech savant, I think a Google guy, who actually has formally created a religion around artificial intelligence. Mm. So what we're dealing with is an alternative or competing eschatology. When we think about, you know, the Christian hope, what we have as part of the kind of the package when it comes to Christian hope is the resurrection of the body. So the glorification that comes along with that. And there are things that we are looking forward to as Christians, which really do transcend sort of the human sort of range of possibilities that we currently have, currently are subject to and limited by. So transhumanism is an attempt to transcend limits, transcend boundaries, but by means of, you know, technological or engineering as opposed to the power of God. So there is a competing eschatology when it comes to, you know, what the Eastern Church refers to as theosis, and in the West we refer to as glorification. But apotheosis is the self-divinization project, and that's definitely what transhumanism is up to. So they're pursuing, a kind of existence that leaves, you know, the biological sort of limits that we're all subject to behind. And if you want to kind of dig into it, you can just read anything by Noah Yuval Harari or Ray Kurzweil or Brian Johnson. You know, there are just a number of these people out there who are promoting this. And then related to that is a kind of a vision of the future, kind of a kingdom of God without God, or at least with a God that, a different God, in other words, a God that we've made. And again, a lot of those guys use that language. They say they're making God.
Yeah, you mentioned it earlier, there's an alternative eschatology at play. And that's not an exaggeration. If you look at these guys in their own words, they are really envisioning a utopian future, which, you know, on the one level you can critique and just say, have you ever seen a movie? Just do you have any idea how this goes? But they really believe it. And, you know, there's a lot of pernicious worldviews and ideologies, you know, Marxism, for instance, that are built on a different telling of the story. And that can really be a powerful motivator, but it's also built on this alternative anthropology as well. And I'm curious to get your thoughts, Chris, on something that somebody posed to me recently. And they said, you know, in one way, this is the oldest story in the book, speaking specifically of transhumanism, you know, this idea that eventually there's going to be this singularity where we merge with machines. And I still think for most of us, there's enough of a normalcy bias where that just seems so far-fetched. And sure, maybe there's some, you know, elites in Davos that want to make that happen. But practically speaking, you know, nothing ever happens, right? That's kind of the trope is that nothing happens. Well, nothing happens until something happens, right? And this person said that, well, it's the oldest story in the book, depending on your view of Genesis 6, but I take the older view of that. I think that there's supernatural things happening in Genesis 6, not just a mixing of biological lineages. And this idea that Satan was at one point in redemptive history working to stop, one, he hates the image of God. He's working to stamp out the image of God. But two, that he also specifically wanted to stamp out the bloodline of the Messiah. And one way to do that is to corrupt the literal bloodline of the human race. Well, are we seeing some of that in reverse or maybe not in reverse, but, you know, for us now in this new covenant age, you know, all who call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. But implicit in that is you have to be human. And I can't help but wonder is if we can shatter that image of God, then maybe that's sort of a last ditch attempt to stop the progress of the gospel. Am I assigning too much spiritual significance to these things, or are we right to ask those types of questions?
No, I think we're right to ask those questions. This is a very powerful and sort of a pervasive movement in our society. So, you know, when I started my work on artificial intelligence about a year ago, almost nobody was talking about it. Now everybody's talking about it, won't shut up. You know, so in 1 year, we've gone from like, what is that, to like the end of the world. And I think this is just going to accelerate. Things are going to continue to develop. And it's because there's just a lot of stuff that's being rolled out that really will change the world in fundamental ways. Just thinking in terms of like how companies go about making things and the role of robotics and all of this. There really are some significant breakthroughs technologically over the last 5 to 6 years that, you know, have the kind of range of consequences that we associate with the Industrial Revolution. We're in a revolutionary moment.
I mean, there's so many ways that this conversation could go, and I know we're going to have to cover a lot more into the overtime episode, but what are some of the things that you're seeing with AI and its effect on the church, or potential effect on the church, or even in our societies and how we relate to one another that most concern you?
Well, I think there are some things that are immediately evident and we're already dealing with, but I wonder how aware people are of them. So one of those things are chatbot companions that children are using, and some of them have pornographic character. So there are young people who are already addicted to this stuff. It's already kind of a problem in public schools. So even in the public, you know, secular public school scene, there are people in places of authority who like are really getting kind of worried about this stuff. You know, people like Jonathan Haidt, who wrote Anxious Generation, you know, it took us like 10 years to figure out like social media is really bad for kids. I don't know why it took so long. I could kind of see it from the start, and we ought to be able to see that this is going to be a problem. So let me give you just sort of a picture of it. So, for people who don't have, exposure to this, they don't have kind of the ability to appreciate the fact that that these chatbots are really sycophants. They really just kind of want to give you what you want. And I'm anthropomorphizing things. I mean, I'm not saying there's an actual consciousness there, but they'll lead you along and play to your fantasies, visually and you know, conceptually and through conversation into some really bad places. And these things can become obsessive, and kids are actually kind of, some kids are actually kind of shutting down socially and only want to interact with their chatbot companion. So like, just think about it this way. You know, we've always, for years, I think forever, you know, we've had little kids who've had like imaginary friends and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Well, this just takes it to another level. There actually is a thing out there. And by the way, this is recording everything you're doing and everything you're telling it. I mean, there's somebody who's getting this information. Mm. Of course, it's ending up in these vast databases, but it's accessible to someone who knows what to look for, who you know, they want to learn about. But there are just so many ways that psychologically and socially, and even in sort of pedagogically, in terms of like our ability to learn and so forth, that artificial intelligence is already demonstrating at a sort of a adverse effect upon, that we ought to be alarmed and doing stuff right now, not waiting 10 years to see an entire generation kind of like, as debris.
I saw that was one of the things that was rolled into the big, beautiful bill, at least in the initial House version, was that AI was not going to be federally regulated for, what was it, 10 years? Right. This is one of those cases where I am all for government regulation, just cards on the table. Right. But there's so much that comes to mind. Maybe we can end with this as we wrap up. You know, as we encounter globalism everywhere, we send missionaries overseas and they get to, you know, Shanghai and there's a McDonald's there, right? Like that's globalism. That's what it does to the mission fields of the world. Well, the religion that's baked into that is a kind of secularism. And I remember what a Chinese student at Liberty University told me years ago, and he was Buddhist background. He didn't know the first thing about Christianity. His parents just sent him to Liberty University because it seemed safer than one of those state schools, and they wanted him to study in the U.S. And he said, as we explored religion, he said, well, we don't need religion in China because we have technology. and I think that betrays so much truth, you know, coming from just pure instinct is what he didn't share that out of some deep transhumanist philosophy. That was just his knee jerk based on the life that he had lived, you know, for those 18 years up until that point. And I think that's where we're going to find ourselves as we're reaching out to our neighbors, as missionaries are reaching out to their neighbors, is not that there's a lot of thinking that's gone into a deep conviction of the merits of, you know, of that hideous strength style transhumanism, but rather that, well, if I just have this magic eight ball with me in all of life, why do I need prayer? I can just ask it. If I need affirmation, I can just, you know, pull up my Stuart Smalley GPT and have it tell me how wonderful I am. And it's a functional God, which is just as much a barrier to the gospel as an actual God would be. And my position on whether or not there's demons in the system is it almost doesn't matter because it's performing the same function. So maybe in the last minute or two before we carry it into overtime, Chris, how would you encourage us to think along those lines, you know, avoiding this as a functional savior, never mind an actual spiritual force?
Yeah, I think that idolatry is an important feature to this. And one of the things about idolatry that I think we're going to recover, we speak of like disordered loves as kind of evidence of idolatry. Like if you like are living for your job, or you're like living for wealthy or something like that, you could say, well, that you've got an idol in your life and you need to address that. But we know that we're not really talking about idols in the same way people in the past did. Here's the bad news. The old way of talking about idols is coming back. Mm. And we're going to actually be dealing with, I think, things that actually have the character of the idols that we associate with, you know, life in the first century.
Only they're going to be silicon instead of wood.
And they're going to, and they're actually going to be able to do stuff for you.
Yeah.
And you'll make sacrifices to them. Maybe not in that, and maybe not with that in, you know, language, but you will do it.
And your life will get better. You know, that's right. One of the things that we forget about Old Testament idolatry. Right. The reason the Israelites fell into it so often is probably because it worked on some level. Hmm. Their crops probably were blessed. That's probably why they were so tempted. So, you know, there's so much for us to discern here. And I know a lot of us are probably thinking, okay, but how do I use it? It's not going away. Is there an ethical way to use it? Now, we're going to cover that in our bonus segment for subscribers. So in your Apple Podcast app, you can hit subscribe. You like that? That's how we do that. Chris, you should try that on the podcast. That'll fund your next UK trip. Mm-hmm. If you are also on the web, go to missionspodcast.com/premium to get access now. Until our next conversation, go and make disciples of all the nations.